Okay, please find a comfortable posture. Keep your back straight as much as you can. Gently close the eyes. Beautiful day today, after work, after busy day, good intention. Ask yourself a question, why I am here? What is the purpose? This is the place for us to go inward, not outward. Always we are spending our time for outward activities. That's why we are creating more negativities, difficulties, situations. When you are going inward, you will see who you are, how you are, how you feel. Your emotions, challenges. I think this is the purpose to be here. Having that intention in your mind, take deep, long breath and hold. Then release, then relax your body, relax your mind. Maybe you can do two more times. Experience relaxation and peace. Feel harmony with your body. Feel close to yourself. Now send your loving thoughts towards yourself, thinking, may I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. Practicing self-love is the foundation for your inner journey. It is almost like a building a home. Strong, solid foundation makes your home also strong. When you are practicing self-care, self-love, you are laying strong foundation for your inner journey. That means hard work is done. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. In the beginning, we are repeating words to make our intention. If you are loving and kind to yourself, no need to say it, no need to repeat it. Still, we all have some weaknesses. That's why we are making this intention or wholesome thought in your mind. Then maintain that skillful thought in your mind. Now you can expand your loving thoughts towards your family. Think of them individually, by names. Parents and grandparents, brothers and sisters, my spouse, grandchildren. May they be well. May they be happy. May they be peaceful. If they are lovingly connected to you, it is very easy for you to practice loving kindness towards them. There is no hard feeling. However, how about difficult, negative, or challenging family members? When you think of them, how do you feel right now? What do you see in your mind? Are you angry or disappointed, or you don't want to think of them? That's not the solution. Change your perspective. Whatever they did, that is their responsibility. But your job is keep sending loving thoughts towards them. May they be well. May they be happy. May they be peaceful. send your loving thoughts towards whole world. May all living beings be well, be happy, be peaceful. As I said, just maintain that skillful thought in your mind. Don't try so hard. Now slowly turn your attention to your breath. It means your life. When we are focusing on our breath, it doesn't mean we are practicing a religion. When you are focusing on your breath, it means you are taking care of your life. Paying attention to your life, which is your breath, pranayama, prana. Every breath you take in, you take out, is taken mindfully. Focus on your natural, ordinary breath. Mind wanders. Is it challenging for you? Controlling your mind, or controlling your thoughts, or emotions, or feeling, is not meditation. Observing them, understanding them, finding the root cause, that is the meditation. We all have begun a journey into our minds and heart, journey of discovery and who and what we are. Sometimes you may experience restlessness, sleepiness, laziness, some boredom, doubts. Perhaps regrets. Be aware about them. Smile to them. Looking at them. Ask, why are you here? You can be gentle with those distractions or negativities instead of pushing them away. When we have some guests come to your house, how do you treat them? With love, with compassion, acceptance, same way, instead of making negative connection with them or rejecting them. Be gentle with them. Treat them with love. Then they will leave without disturbing you. We all are distracted with in and out situations. Why we are focusing on our breath? To calm down our body and mind. When we are distracted, we cannot see who we are, the depth of our lives, what is going on. We are making negative decisions. When you are focusing on your breath, you settle down. It's like a pond or lake. If it is muddy or murky, you cannot see the bottom of the pond. If you are distracted, how you are going to see yourself clearly? Breath will help you to see when you keep it calm. We all have a busy lifestyle. There is no time for us to see ourselves. Therefore, it is important to pause. Think to yourself, pause is my friend. My breath is my noble lifelong companion. From the birth until you die, breath is always supporting you, care about you. That's why I call my breath is my noble companion. You cannot breathe last moment. You cannot breathe the next moment. Only this present moment. If you want to change your posture, please change at any time. Be kind to your physical body. It is okay to change. Meditation is not a punishment. Now bring your palms together close to your heart. We call bow. Namaste. Respect to ourselves and respect to other people. Second meaning is receive and going inward, not outward. And third meaning of bowing is surrender, let go of your egotistical mind, be humble without being a doormat. Now think to yourself, I can keep my mind like this if I make that wish and determination. I need courage and effort for this. Suffering is optional. Think to yourself, I'm going to meditate every day, even 2 minutes you can make, I can make, to find my inner joy, balance and contentment. May peace be with you. May you be well. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. Thank you very much. Please open your eyes. Okay, now I would like to invite Kim and to share some few words, some wisdom. Yeah, you can go to the podium, yeah. Thank you.
Actually, in the meditation tonight, I thought that really wasn't true. something began to change in my life with Buddhism and meditation when I took a student intern in my place of employment who identified as a Zen priest. At that time in my career, I was heading a program that assessed suicidal, homicidal, psychotic youth, and then we provided counseling to the youth and to the families. It was considered crisis counseling. It was a very intense position within the field of the hall. So as a student intern came in from a master's in social work program to learn how to work with youth, I began peppering him with questions about his experience with Buddhism. And we spent quite a bit of time talking about his experience and the beliefs and meditation, etc. He did run a meditation group in the area, but something at that point held me back from attending his meditation group. And in thinking about that, I believe that his style and the way he was presenting his version of Buddhism and meditation just didn't click for me at that time. I think it's important to spend a little bit of time thinking about this. And I think that in looking back, you have to make sure that the sangha you choose is a good fit for you. And one of the people you meet when you first attend a temple make a lasting impression on whether or not you'll feel comfortable, accepted, and free enough to be vulnerable. Because in my experience, vulnerability does come up through meditation and through this practice. My experience with my Zen priest intern turned sour as it felt like the conversations were filled with his ego. Most conversations turned into him speaking about himself and the wonderful ways he mastered, in air quotes, Buddhism. I guess the time that he told me a story about going in to buy tea, and the shop owner, the tea shop, was telling him how long to steep the tea, and he was quite offended by this because he considered himself master tea brewer, I guess. And in his retelling of this story to me, it just felt like the spot of his arrogance that he was displaying while he was saying this, instead of taking a walk into a tea shop, the tea shop owner is being helpful and saying, oh, you speak this to you for 3 minutes, you boil it this long, and whatever it is you do. So that was another reason that my spiritual journey continued without doing any meditation or going to a Buddhist temple. So then I started searching online. So I'm looking online for meditation, Buddhist temples, etc. And what I found was Shambhala in Chicago. So I shared with my wife that they were having a weekend retreat at Shambhala for beginners to learn meditation. And for my 45th birthday, she reserved 2 spaces for us, because I certainly didn't want to go alone, and she had no interest in it whatsoever. So, but that was what I got for my birthday present, and I was very, very grateful for that. So that was a true beginning of my introduction into meditation, Dhamma, Sangha, and Buddhism. Through this experience, I slowly formed a daily meditation practice. I traveled to Shambhala to meditate in person and participate within the Sangha every week. I completed their classes on the way of Shambhala. I attended numerous weekend retreats in various areas. I went through various in-person and online courses. So I really began developing my practice and becoming immersed in the experience. The basic premise of Shambhala meditation I Not to mention the thoughts about my past, my future, what I should be accomplishing while I was just sitting there, and various other random thoughts that jogged through my attention while I was attempting to meditate. Once I finished meditating, I think about why I was thinking about all that extreme stuff. I wouldn't give many of those thoughts that were screaming for attention during my meditation a second thought once I finished meditating. So it's not like they were thoughts that would continue lingering in my mind during meditation. And I'm sure many of you here this evening know what I'm talking about as I say that. I'm a type A personality, so one of the challenges I faced in developing my practice was not going full throttle ahead. I can take something, as you call me, and make it stressful without trying all that out at all. And that's what I began doing with my meditation practice. For example, I started with 10 minutes of meditation, so just sit for 10 minutes, which in the beginning was very difficult to do. And that was fine for me for about a week. And then my type A personality would kick in, and we had to up that 10 minutes. That wasn't going to be good enough anymore. And then I'd have to increase it, maybe meditate in the morning for 10 minutes, and then the evening 10 minutes wasn't enough, maybe we should add lunchtime and bump that up a little more. Well, needless to say, that made my meditation practice more stressful for me than relaxing. I feel like I was just trying too hard, and realize now that it was another way in which I was trying to control the process instead of just participating in the process. So slowly, I learned to let go, relax, not set guidelines for my meditation training and practice. I didn't have to treat it like I was training to run a marathon. I could just sit and meditate for however long my schedule, my day would allow. And I tried to make a commitment to do that, to stay in the moment as much as I could and being okay with that and saying to myself that that was enough. All of this slowly began to change through building a daily practice, starting the Dhamma, regularly participating in my Sangha, Sangha. My feelings of anxiety while meditating slowly began to decrease and lessen. I found that I could indeed sit in my seat and return to my breath more quickly once I noticed my mind wandering. And my training time was labeled thinking, return to the breath, thinking, return to the breath. Certainly, you should relate to this as well. I felt like I was saying thinking more than even actually breathing or returning to the breath for a long time. And still sometimes that happens. I became more comfortable with the process, and I found I enjoyed the calming effects I was feeling after meditating. I also found that I did start going inside a little bit more, and I became slightly more patient. I'm not a very patient person, but slightly more patient. Then the true nature of impermanence manifested in my life once again. And I very much enjoyed Shambhala and the trainings I was obtaining through Shambhala. But negative events with leadership occurred, and these aren't opinions, these are actual facts of what happened within the Shambhala community. So there were allegations against the spiritual head of the Shambhala community. They were quite shocking, and of the nature of exploiting other human beings, especially female members within the community. The allegations were that they had gone on for some time. So this is actually what happened. It led me to question where I was a member and what I had been practicing and putting my trust in. And slowly I found myself withdrawing from the Shambhala community because the community which I loved was being torn apart from the inside through this incident. So the community members were, once it felt like a loving, caring environment, people started taking sides and choosing sides. Arguing right and wrong, things like that. And I didn't want any part of that conflict or any part of what was occurring within that community. So, throughout that whole process, I was also struck with the victims within this that led to the spiritual crisis. was ready to look for a new community to become a part of. And this feeling of connection with numbers in the community, and I was craving interactions with people who were also looking for their sanity and inner peace through meditation. I missed receiving formal instruction on the Dhamma. I missed attending retreats to build my practice. And I'd actually heard of the Blue Lotus many years back when I was first looking online. I don't know why, but I didn't check out the Blue Lotus at the time. Maybe I thought driving to the place I should probably do a little closer than coming up to Woodstock, I'm not sure. But I did not check out the Blue Lotus, and I don't even remember it. You know, I saw it online, and I know somebody had spoken to me about it, but I don't remember much more than that. I think it was Chanel instead. But now I felt ready, and after weeks of looking at Blue Lotus's website, which I'm sure many of you that come for the first time can identify with, feel a little anxiety about coming to a new place where you don't know, and tend to memorize the website and try to get a feel for who the people are and what it will be like once you enter into the building. So I finally decided almost a year and a half ago to attend my first meditation session for the Blue Lotus. My nerves were on high alert when I first walked into Blue Lotus because I really didn't know what I should expect. I wasn't quite as nervous as the first time I went to Shambhala because I had developed a practice. I had been meditating, studying, and participating with the community. So I didn't feel quite as anxious as though it was the first time. I do remember that when I first walked into Blue Lotus, I felt the vibe was very positive, open, and accepting, and I knew I'd found a good fit for myself. I do realize that this is just the first part of my spiritual journey, and there's much more to come for me. And I look forward to it. I also realize how I feel today is fleeting. Permanence does rule, and no doubt other events will occur, which will lead to twists and turns in my journey. I'm ready and open to this, at least at this moment today. So I'd like to, I'd like to open it up. Anybody has anything to share or say or anything to ask me, which I may or may not be able to offer insight into.
I personally am so grateful to hear your story.
Thank you.
So thank you so much. So I heard so many similar stories like that with that same organization you are talking about. A couple of people came to me and talked about it. So one suggestion I really want to make to you all, when you go to a place like a Blue Lotus or other organization, just go for your practice, not for the person. So now think about, I'm the head of the temple now here. I'm the founder. I started it, 22 years ago. Maybe one day I will change. That's the nature of the human condition. But whatever I was teaching you, so maybe it's help you. So therefore, you can respect the teacher. I totally understand. Come for the teachings. So don't come for Bhante Rahula or me. So usually, that's the nature of a human condition. We all do. We listen to a teacher, then we are falling in love with the teacher. So I remember a long time ago, somebody, the monk told me, somebody walk into the building for meditation Wednesday night or something like that. Then they walk in, he look around and didn't see me, right? Then he asked, where's Bhante Sujata? Now, other monk said, he's not here. No, that means I'm not coming. I'm going. That person didn't come to meditation. So be careful with that. So you are coming for your inner journey, not for the person. It's really important, So that's the one reason Buddha, before he passed, his attendant asked from the Buddha, after you leave, who is going to be the leader of this order? Buddha said, nobody. Nobody going to be the leader after I die. It's very interesting. So then he said, who is going to guide us? Buddha said, my teachings. My teaching guide you, not a person. So in the Buddhist order, Buddhist path, there is no hierarchies. So now here, everybody respect me. I'm the senior, I'm the founder, that's it. I'm respecting to my teachers and my masters, that's it. They are not hierarchy of the Buddhism or Buddhist teaching. Sometimes people are asking, oh, Dalai Lama is the head of the Buddhism. No, we don't have a head. So only guidance we have, the teachings. So I'm so grateful to hear that story. Thank you. Anybody have any thoughts? We have 5 more minutes.
I mean, it's a high burnout job. It's the things that nobody wants to think or hear that other people are doing to other people. And you can't believe half of it. And so you can only, I feel like, personally, I can only do that. So, you know, all the tantra practice in the world wasn't going to let you release all of that. And so I think that, you know, after having done that for, I think it was about 15 years, that was it. And that's a long time in that field. So, yeah. And prior to that, I was working with adults who are mentally ill, severely mentally ill. So I was working at the time they call them intermediate care facilities in Chicago with adult mentally ill. And they live there. So I just love the high stress jobs. Anything else?
Okay.
But it was very good.
That's so normal. Yeah. So sometimes people are thinking when I'm going to start to practice meditation, I'm going to be peaceful. So one day I was doing after I opened the Blue Lotus, so I did the first day retreat with our community in Harvard. So after I start the retreat, it's a silent retreat, first silent retreat, I said to people, okay, my friends, okay, I gave all the instruction throughout the whole day, even during the lunch, no talk. So watch yourself, and I was doing my practice, everybody's doing practice, I can see, you know, I'm watching people. End of the retreat, I asked, how was it? So one member of the temple said, I'm so glad you announced in the morning you are not going to have a peaceful experience during this retreat. I'm so glad you said that. Otherwise, I felt I was so angry during the retreat. Why? All the emotions keep coming and bombarding, and I felt I want to kill Bhante Sujata. And he said that. Then I asked, why? Why you are the one put into the situation for me to be quiet. So therefore, meditation in the beginning, it is not always fun. So prepare for the worst. So in Indian Ayurvedic medicine, when people go, you know, Western medicine always give the pills, done, right? So Ayurvedic medicine, we give the medicine to make the, you know, the problem worst. Then they are treating after that. So meditation does the same thing, I feel. When you are practicing meditation, first you experience all those negativities you repress so long, they are coming to the surface, then you don't know what to do with them. It's a very stressed out job. So that's why we need the Sangha, it's a community, or noble friend to talk and ask some questions. And that way we can handle it. So just keep those thoughts in your mind.
I decided to let meditation be the relaxed thing to do. And, you know, research shows that exercise increases the natural dopamine and helps with depression and things like that. I don't know, you know, just walking or doing other things, but I kind of tweaked it, if that makes sense. So I kind of left the meditation to just be meditation. I mean, and to this day, Bhante, Rahula, some talk said something about mixing up the meditation. We did silent meditation, which I love, and I think I was talking about walking meditation, which I used to do. But so I try to mix it up so I'm not getting routinized with it, and that seems to relieve that pressure, because I don't want to give myself more pressure and more anxiety over it. So I don't want that. And trying to, and I would do other things to deal with anxiety too, like going to work out, things like that. So I would kind of take a multi-pronged approach.
Okay, everybody, thank you so much. Time passed. And so any new people today, first timers? Okay, please introduce yourself. I know you, but... yeah, introduce yourself. Thank you so much coming all the way. Thank you, we are so grateful. Okay, one announcement I want to make. September 7th, we have a very exciting event happening at the temple, and our healing unity garden we are opening to public. You can see Buddha is like covered, and it's a beautiful marble Buddha, came from all the way from Vietnam. So we are going to dedicate that because we have Mother Mary and Jesus and Buddha and all spiritual icons are here. So therefore we are inviting Saturday, September 7th, everybody to join. We are doing our regular meditation. Then we are dedicating that medicine Buddha outside. So that means we have outside meditation garden. Even temple is shut down, you know, not always open, so people can come and meditate even in the evening at night. So therefore please join, bring your family, and if you are joining, join to that event, please bring some flowers and to open the Buddha that day. Okay, thank you so much. Please stand up.